This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're talking about how and why some schools across the state are going virtual and how teachers, parents, and students feel about it. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. We're joined now by Eric Weddle, an education reporter from our flagship station, WFYI. Hi, Eric.
Hello, Matt. How are you today?
Doing okay, but can you talk about the order the Marion County Public Health Department gave last week?
Yeah, so, you know, earlier this year, the Marion County Health Department set some guidelines for when they would ask schools to close. And the guidelines, you know, it depended on the percentage of infections in the county, whether certain grade levels would be required to shift to virtual learning or hybrid learning. And it depended on the lower infection rate. Elementary schools, you know, could open, the higher the infection rate, older students would be required to do hybrid learning. So about a week ago, the positivity rate among high school students and middle school students was increasing to about 18% and 14% respectively. And that was higher than the infection rate overall in the county. And earlier, the health department had set a positive infection rate of 13% for when schools would have to shift to remote learning. And since those older students were hitting that higher amount, and the department thought that elementary students would also see very high infection rates, they made the decision to order all schools, public and private, to close until January 15th.
I mean, it might be hard to tell now, but considering how the number of cases has been looking recently, do you think that it's possible that schools might have to stay virtual longer than mid-January?
Well, I think, you know, that's what everyone's, you know, the question is right now. We just don't know. The health department will be, you know, reviewing this information probably early next month. I mean, early in January. And they will be making, you know, now this order ends when it ends on January 15th. I mean, most schools have announced they plan to reopen the Monday after that date.
Do you think that an order like this could or maybe should have been given earlier this year? Could that have prevented certain issues from happening?
Well, you know, I think the big issue people are, you know, confused about is the health department and the mayor's office, you know, has said there really isn't any evidence or widespread reporting of the coronavirus spreading within schools. It's the community spread that we're causing so much concern. So even though high school students and middle school students are having an increased rate of infection, the health department says that infection is actually happening outside of the schools, at homes, other places, and then it's being brought into the schools. So far, you know, it seems like, you know, the schools in Marion County, you know, have not seen widespread outbreaks, and all the rules that are in place, the health and safety policies, have shown to work so far.
Do you think schools knew that they would eventually have to go virtual again during this semester?
I mean, I'm not aware of any school leader, principal, superintendent, you know, school board member who didn't expect this was going to happen. You know, I think that is why a lot of schools wanted to make sure they got back in school in person for a little bit of time, just so they could connect with kids, refine the virtual learning, how to do it correctly in case we did have a winter where, you know, it was extended again, like last spring. You know, I also don't know really any school leader who wants to remain virtual. You know, they want to be teaching students in person. But right now, you know, they're following these orders.
Were the schools in Marion County prepared to make this transition again like they did earlier this year in March? Did it seem a little easier this time around?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what happened in March, you know, I think everyone across the country, you know, was just scraping by to offer some type of virtual remote options to students. You know, over the summer, you know, I know Indianapolis Public School Districts, Wayne Township Schools, you know, all these schools in Marion County put in the time and the work to create some type of remote learning that would really, you know, inform and educate children. And I think that when the school year opened, they had to make sure that was working and have it ready for if they had to switch back to that full remote, which we're doing now. So, you know, I think they've done the most that they could do right now.
Can you remind us what models Marion County Schools were following before this order? What did schools look like around here in Central Indiana?
District, yeah, but I mean, you know, some schools, you know, most of the schools, you know, elementary schools, elementary children were in full time, attending school full time. Middle and high school students, depending on the district, some were at hybrid mode, which means, you know, they would attend school only a few days. But most school districts, you know, are offering students the option to remain home, for families to keep their children home and do some type of virtual learning.
And when we compare Marion County to other counties, I mean, are things looking different here in Marion County versus other parts of the state? I mean, you can point at smaller differences, but are there big ones?
I mean, I think, you know, I mean, all the schools in the state are required to have remote learning plans, you know, so that's all in place. I think what we're seeing different is how the health departments, you know, are responding to the statewide increase and countywide increase of the coronavirus. Hamilton County recently made some changes to their, you know, health order, but they are allowing schools to remain open and kind of letting school districts there decide on their own what to do in terms of remaining fully in person or not.
What about the number of cases? Do we know how the number of cases among students in Marion County compares to other counties?
Well, you know, statewide, there's about 15,000 cases of infections from students, teachers, and staff in schools. In Marion County, some of the schools are, so I don't have that right in front of me, but you know, it's hard to say right now, like, which county has the most infections, because the data really is not all collected in one place right now. We have data at the local level and data at the state level. And right now, that's really not being provided by any official source to compare those.
Obviously, the impact of positive cases is great enough to force us to virtual right now. But can you illustrate a little more on the impact of positive cases and the quarantining of teachers on classrooms across Marion County? What have they had to deal with?
Well, I mean, I think it's just, you know, not just Marion County, but I think, you know, throughout the state, you know, I think, you know, you're finding more and more staff members, you know, when they come in contact with a student in school that has the coronavirus, or, you know, when their own lives outside the building, you know, they're having to quarantine. And that is putting pressure on some school district to have subs available. You know, Indianapolis Public Schools had said after the order was announced to close the schools in Marion County, the superintendent said that she was worried if that order had not happened, the school could be in the position to close schools due to the lack of staff being available if the quarantines had continued on the rate that it was going.
Are these issues unique to Marion County in any way, or similar things happening all over the state?
I mean, I think we're seeing it, you know, happen at, all over the state, all over the country. You know, I mean, the community spread that's going on seems to be, you know, impacting families, impacting, you know, children in different ways. But I think the issues that we face in Marion County, you know, are the same that we're seeing happen in Tippecanoe County and Lake County, you know, all over the state.
Have you heard how teachers in Marion County are feeling about going virtual?
I think the big issue for many is that they want to be in front of their students and teach them. They want to see those kids day to day and be able to talk to them and make sure that they're learning, you know. So virtual, you lose a lot of that, you know. And I think, you know, teachers are afraid of students, you know, not logging in, you know, not seeing them all the time. So that is definitely, you know, I think the biggest concern among teachers I've spoken to. And there's also just, you know, the issue of, like, you know, once again, trying to find a way to do this work, to teach reading to a student, you know, to teach math when you are virtual and you're trying to deal with maybe 25, 30, you know, little faces on a screen, you know, throughout the day.
How about the parents? How are they dealing with this transition?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, you can find parents, you know, on both sides of this, some that are very happy that the schools, the health department has done this. And you're finding parents who are very upset that they don't think that this is the right decision for the mayor and Marin County to make for Mayor Joe Hogsett. This morning, I spoke with a parent, Leanne O'Neill, who started a group recently called Indy Schools Matter. It's a group of parents, about six parents who have children in Marin County. And right now they're raising money to file a civil suit against Marin County in hope of getting a court injunction to stop this health order. They think that the health order goes against the state constitution, which provides, you know, for a free education to students. And they think that schools should be allowed to decide on their own whether or not they're going to remain open during this time. They're also frustrated, and I think you'll see this a lot, just talking to people, that schools are closed right now, but we have bars and restaurants and other kind of businesses that are still allowed to be open. And some of those businesses, you know, are ones that we've heard about being the source of this community spread.
And in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, I mean, what resources are out there for families that might need help with virtual learning?
Right. So there is groups, people here called that have set up learning sites, which are available in Marin County. And these are churches, community centers, and other organizations which are opening their doors up starting on the 30th, basically to provide free, you know, all day school time care for students to go and do e-learning and providing meals for them to have. And we have information about that at WFY.org and how you can find out where a center is and get free care. There's about 800 seats available, I think, from November 30th until mid-January.
All right. Eric Weddle is an education reporter from our flagship station, WFYI in Indianapolis. Eric, thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you, Matt. Good talking to you.
We'll be back with new guests after a quick break. We're talking about how and why some Indiana schools are going virtual. And if you have questions or comments for the show, find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about the transition to virtual learning from some schools for some schools across the state. And we would love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store, send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. We're joined now by Bill Riley, the Director of Communications for Vigo County School Corporation. Bill, welcome to All In.
Thanks for having me.
So what's going on in Vigo County right now with Vigo County schools? Are they in person, hybrid, virtual?
We are fully virtual right now. We sent our middle and high schools to virtual learning on November 12th. And our elementaries to full virtual learning on November 19th, and we'll be fully virtual until at least December 7th.
Okay, so at least until December 7th. When is the reassessment for that decision, would you say?
It's ongoing. You know, I think we've attacked a lot of what has to do with COVID-19 in a really comprehensive way. We have a task force that we've set up with local health care leaders. We have a professor from a local college who specializes in viruses, parents, principals, teachers, all coming together to have conversations about COVID-19 in Vigo County on a weekly basis. And so those conversations happen almost daily, even for us internally, but with the task force on a weekly basis.
Is there optimism that schools might be, or at least some schools might, go back in person there by early, mid-December, and or even pressure? Is there pressure that you're hearing from parents or organizations to get kids back in the classroom?
Well, I listened to Eric Weddle's segment just before mine, and I found myself nodding my head quite a bit. If you ask 100 people, 100 teachers, 100 parents, you're going to get 100 different responses. And so is there pressure? Yes, I think from all sides of this issue. I think we are optimistic. We have 2 weeks between the 7th and the 21st to close out our semester. I think we're optimistic that we'll be able to offer some form of in-person education in those 2 weeks. But a lot of it depends on community spread and available staff.
Did teachers or families and students, for that matter, I guess, did by and large, did they want schools to go virtual?
They did. So we this summer, we did a community survey and we had great response. We had about 65% of our families respond, which when you have 14,000 students, that's a pretty good rate. By and large, the option that most people said on that survey they were looking for is in-person education 5 days a week. We didn't start that way. We started an A-B model where we split all students K through 12 into cohorts, an A cohort and a B cohort, and they attended every other day. It allowed for greater social distancing, and so we felt like that was a great way to step into the school year. So that's how we started.
We got a comment from Kathy on Facebook who says, I became a big fan of the hybrid approach to learning this fall. I'm the parent of three teenagers, one with special needs. My husband and I both have jobs that we need to hold down, and at-home learning creates too many challenges for families. We simply can't make it effective. We've watched so many skills decline in our special needs child despite our best efforts. And as your guest indicated, there are no schools reporting in-school spread of the virus. I don't know that that's what they said, but but Kathy said go back to hybrid, students need it. So Kathy sounds like is among the parents who are looking for this hybrid model. But Bill, I've heard in conversation over conversation that the hybrid model seems to be the most challenging compared to the in-person versus all virtual. Do you hear the same?
Well, so when you're thinking about the complications in offering in-person education for us, a local school corporation with 14,000 students, a hybrid model is great to distance students, but it does nothing for us in terms of available staff. We still have the same amount of adults in the building every day when we are hybrid. And so if we're having staff quarantines or staff positive cases, and as Eric noted, our healthcare leaders are telling us that a lot of the spread, most of the spread, virtually all the spread is happening outside of the school and then coming in contact with the school. But that doesn't mean that the adults in the building aren't affected. And so it still puts a lot of pressure on corporations to have enough staff to run school effectively and safely. And so we like the hybrid model, especially at middle and high school, for the reasons that she articulates. It allows us to maybe hold school a little bit safer, but it does nothing for the adults in the building. And I think that's probably the biggest pressure point we have right now in offering in-person school.
And we got a comment from Twitter, and this it says Vigo County mom here. Please note with Mr. Rado that Vigo is remote, not virtual. Second grade and under don't have Chromebooks, and some schools are still stuck with paper packets. So I guess that illustrates the difference between remote and virtual, or is there some wiggle room there?
Yeah, we are fully remote. And even with our students, and she's absolutely right, we started a one-to-one program that was going to be rolled out over 4 years. It got rolled out in about 3 months at the beginning of this year. We moved at turbo speed to get those devices out. We know it's not healthy for a young child to sit in front of a computer screen all day. And so, you know, there's some fine margins in terms of the way that we offer remote learning, even with students who have Chromebooks. Those Chromebooks have been extremely helpful, though, especially for middle and high school students as they work for credit-bearing classes and stay in touch with their teachers.
We've heard a couple of direct examples just now from parents with children in schools, one of whom has children has a child or perhaps several children in your school corporation. But can you talk about what else you've heard from people who are for or against going virtual or remote for that matter?
I think there's really a range of responses out there. We have some folks that I think before we have a vaccine for them, it's maybe never going to feel safe enough to have in-person school. But we're also kind of listening to the families that we don't hear from much. And I know that sounds a little funny, but we have a high poverty district. We have several elementary schools in our district that are 98% free and reduced lunch. These are children that depend on our schools to feed them twice a day. We've done a great job of offering grab-and-go meals, but certainly not every child is receiving those at the front door of their building every day. And so that's one small thing. I think we're talking a lot about education, but in terms of getting children fed, being able to report child abuse is a major function of our public schools. And when we're fully virtual, that's very difficult to do. Those are the things that we are really concerned about. And then, of course, everybody's mental well-being. We have students who are presenting with mental health issues. We have parents who are presenting with mental health issues. This is absolutely still a crisis, and we know we're not the only school corporation facing that.
We're talking with Bill Riley, the Director of Communications for Vigo County School Corporation. And today we're talking about schools getting, going virtual. A lot of schools around the state are making a transition to all virtual. Some are going hybrid as numbers continue to rise in the COVID-19 pandemic. Can you reiterate what models different Vigo County schools were following before they made the decision to go all virtual? Was it a kind of a smattering of different approaches to learning? Were some already virtual? Were some hybrid? Were some all in person since the top of the school year? What are we looking at?
Yeah, so we started until about mid to late September in an A-B model across all grades, K through 12. We started bringing back our elementary schools first to 5 day a week in person in late September. And we did that because we were either blue or yellow on the state's color-coded map there for, I think, 4 weeks in a row. And we were also hearing from families. Every other day, even remote learning is quite difficult. It's taxing on our parents. It's taxing on our students. And I think we are really concerned about some educational loss. And the numbers looked pretty decent in mid to late fall here in Vigo County. So we started bringing everybody back. We were back K through 12, 5 days a week there for a little bit. And then, we have a great nursing staff, about 8 nurses who work as an advanced contact tracing team. And they were starting to get really bogged down by the complicated nature of contact tracing high school cases. These are students that attend 7 different classes in one day. Taking a look at seating charts to see who needed to be quarantined. I think we've taken a really aggressive approach to quarantines with our health department because that's probably one of our greatest tools to mitigate the spread of this virus. So we started rolling back middle and high school to an AP schedule in late fall as our numbers rose. And then, we still had elementary in 5 days a week in November for a little bit. But we were taking things by a school-by-school basis. We have 18 elementary schools. We had some schools with 0 active cases among students and staff. And then we had some schools where staffing was becoming an issue. We were just had so many staff quarantined or sitting at home that we needed to close that school for maybe a week. And so we've tried to take things in a case-by-case basis, but until recently, just the number of new cases per day, we didn't feel comfortable about the ability to contact trace. And that's why we're fully remote at this point.
I'm glad you brought up educational loss, because I think that that's a concern that a lot of people have, including in perhaps especially those who really want schools to be all in person. Is there optimism among teachers or administration or other personnel that that educational loss can indeed be made up by the end of this school year?
I think teachers are flexible and creative and really just will do everything they can to make up that learning loss. I don't know if that's surmountable, though. I think if you talk to a teacher, they're tired. This has been a very taxing year, and they're going to do their best. But I think we all have to realize that this is still a pandemic, and there will be fallout from that. And one of the fallout, unfortunately, is learning loss. I think even being in 5 days a week in a nation worldwide crisis, we're still going to see learning loss because of the things that are happening outside of the school building. We'll do everything we can to combat that. We had teachers doing tens of thousands of hours in professional development on our new digital tools to provide remote learning. They're learning as they go. They're building the airplane as they fly it. But will it be enough to say that a student is going to rise to the level that they would have without this pandemic? I think that's really difficult pressure to put on teachers and staff and students. I think there's a lot happening in everybody's lives that is impacting this.
Well, I mean, obviously, teachers have years of context behind them and precedent for how things normally operate. Students have less so. But you mentioned how tired the teachers are. Does it seem like the same thing is happening to the students? Are they fatigued as well because of all this?
Oh, absolutely. I think parents, teachers, students, administrators, principals, I think we're really starting to feel the fatigue of this. And it's heartening to see the teacher that is being creative and going the extra mile. But I think that also puts pressure on every other teacher to do that. And, some days I think not everybody has that in them. I think that's the same for students. I think students are dealing with a variety of social fallout, emotional fallout, mental fallout, as well as academic fallout from this. And I think maybe showing everybody a little bit of grace right now and understanding, I think that's one of the reasons why we want to offer some version of in-person school, because we get to look each other in the eye and ask, are you okay, before we get into learning. We get to assess those things on the hierarchy of needs that need to happen before learning can happen.
I guess that kind of gets me to my next question. I mean, is there some degree of mental health check-in among it worked into curriculums? I mean, I'm sure it varies from teacher to teacher, but is that part of the virtual learning experience for them? Have teachers begun to sort of bring that in or maybe find that from bring it in from the outside, like seek it out and find solutions for students and themselves for that matter?
Yeah, I think absolutely. We have Chromebooks now new this year. Again, it was going to be rolled out over a four-year period. We got those this fall. What I'm seeing is a lot of teachers using that Google Meet check-in, especially at the elementary school level, to do that kind of hi, how are you doing, fun part of school. And then letting students work independently, because we know our families have a variety of needs surrounding schedules right now. If somebody's working a night shift, it may not be feasible for them to oversee a student's remote learning during the day. But yeah, that's something we keep reinforcing with our staff, but we don't necessarily need to, because I think our staff understands that that is a priority right now for our students, is mental and emotional health.
Have there been networking resources between or among teachers for the same thing? I mean, you mentioned earlier teachers are tired. Have they been talking about how they're all dealing with it together and giving each other pointers?
Yeah, I think so. We have teacher leaders in each of our building. That's something we rolled out at the beginning of the year. And these teacher leaders are mainly focused on the new technology that we have, the resources that we have to help deliver lessons remotely. But if anybody knows anything about learning how to use a new technology, a lot of what is embedded in helping somebody learn that new technology is kind of easing some fears and talking about, well, how are you doing? What's working? What's not? It becomes almost a little bit of a therapy session, I think. And so I think we're definitely seeing folks band together, pick each other up when they're low. But it is difficult all across the board right now.
Bill Riley is the Director of Communications for Vigo County School Corporation. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with the president of the second largest teachers union in Indiana next about what they've been hearing from teachers across the state and what changes they want to see that would protect teachers and students during the pandemic. And a quick note, our final segment coming up was pre-taped, so we can't take your questions and comments live, but we would still love to hear what you think. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelzer, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on in-person and virtual learning in schools across the state. We're joined now by Gleneva Dunham, who is the president of the Indiana American Federation of Teachers, the second largest teachers union in Indiana. Gleneva Dunham, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me, Matt.
It's been a hectic few months for schools, I guess, to say the least. What has the Indiana American Federation of Teachers been doing to protect teachers during this pandemic?
So what we started with, having weekly calls, which is very normal for us. We usually meet four times a year with our, we have president council's meeting. But since the pandemic came in, we started meeting once a week, and we would meet with our attorney on the our Zoom call. We have up to at least 80 or 90 members on with concerns that they had. So a lot of the concerns were working during COVID and what were the rules and what were the laws and those kind of things. So we've been meeting, and we still continue to meet once school started. Just last week, we turned it into biweekly meetings because teachers are so overwhelmed and overworked and those kind of things. So now we meet every 2 weeks, but we still have our attorney on to talk to them about different things. We've had different legislators come on. We've had different AFT national officers come on to just talk about how it is. Sometimes it's just a conversation to vent. You know, sometimes it's conversations for information. A lot of teachers, you know, talking about retirement during this time, and they want to know how do they go about it. A lot of people want to know their rights when they have the different exceptionalities as far as their health conditions and those kind of things. AFT National has really been helpful in talking to us and helping us with resources, getting out all kind of information, just a lot of things going on to support our members.
You're from Lake County and you also teach at Gary Schools. Can you talk about what schools in Gary are doing right now?
So yes, so right now so I've been the president of Gary Teachers Union for 6 years. So I'm not actually in the classroom. I'm a full-time president. So I have a union office, but so I have been going into schools and meeting. Well, we actually have been virtual in Gary since day one. There was an agreement between the 26 superintendents in Lake County that they were all going to go in on the first day of school, but Lake County has really been one of the highest positivity rate counties in the state, Lake County, along with Marion County. And so we get a lot of the influx from Chicago. And so if you've been listening to the news, we know where Chicago is. And we've been following the science. And our superintendent has weekly briefings with the mayor of the city of Gary and the health commissioner. And so we started off virtual. And except for our career and technical education, they are hybrid because of the stipulations and the on-time, in-person meetings that they have to have. We have brought certain students in to be tested, things like that. Like our kindergartners, our seniors, are now being tested. So some things you have to do face to face. So we've been doing those kind of things. Our staff were in the building, and so they've been in the building since day one, you know, and just if kids need to come in, we've allowed them to do certain things like that, or parents. In the spring, we actually bought 4,500 Chromebooks along with hotspots, which was a giant plus for us, because when we went out in March, we didn't have that. Our students didn't have, you know, they had to use their own laptops and devices. And so we were proud to do that. And then a lot of students and homes didn't have, you know, cable access. So we provided hotspots. So that was good too. We still do paper and pen. So if there's some kids who need that, like our special needs kids, we deliver that to their homes. And also we have food. So we're serving food. We do 2 days a week, Monday and Wednesday. And we're serving like up to about 8,000 people now, because it's an act from the state. It was extended from the summer where you can serve anybody under 18. So we've been servicing a lot of homes that are not even Gary Community School Corporation homes. So they pick up their meals on Monday, and then they pick up their meals for Wednesday. And sometimes teachers make arrangements to meet the parents there and to give them pen and paper or packages and things like that. The students have been able to pick up their books, and so they have their books at home as well. The teachers were working in the building, so they had access to their smart boards, a lot of more resources. Started last Monday when the COVID spiked in Lake County. I think we went up like past 20%. All of our buildings closed except for one. So teachers are now working from home virtually. So nothing changed for the students' instruction, just the teachers are now working from home. And only our central office remains open. And if there were any teachers who had concerns or things where they couldn't work from home, we have one building open where the teachers can work from that building.
I want to come back, though, to this fact that there are disparities when it comes to access to cable internet, and also or adequate, I guess, internet to do virtual learning with, and also the equipment. And we've done a lot of had a lot of conversations about that around the state and what that looks like in different areas. What if you could ballpark a ratio for the number of students who are in need of that kind of an assistance? You talked about sending out equipment and hotspots and things like that. What does that look like in Gary? How many students need that extra help?
Oh, so we, all of them, we actually gave them, everybody that needed it, got it. And most parents, you know, welcomed the hotspot, because then they'd have to, you know, share their Comcast or whatever internet service they had with their students. So we issued out 4,500 Chromebooks and hotspots. And that 4,500 is like more students, you know, if they, you know, we even gave them out if they broke them or something, we gave them out. So we did good on that end. And I was proud. We used title funds to purchase those. And so that put Gary like in high esteem. Matter of fact, our enrollment went up after we announced that we were giving Chromebooks and hotspots to students. I think we gained some of the charter school students. I don't know if you know, but Gary has more charter schools than, you know, any other city of this population anywhere, you know, so we have a lot of charter schools. So, yeah, so in Gary, it worked out fine for us. We worked out fine. Now, that was after we didn't give those out until like maybe May or June. From March to June, our children kind of struggled, because we had not had e-learning, you know, our teachers had not been trained on that, but we kind of had to do on-the-job training, and some of the kids did not have the, you know, they didn't have the laptops or the computers at home, and so that's why we hurried and tried to buy those. We had planned on buying them anyway, but COVID made us buy them sooner, and so they did paper and pencil, a lot of them. They did packets, and then they turned them in. The teachers would meet at the food drop-offs and pick up those packages, check that work, and email the students about how they did. A lot of kids use their phones, you know, because we know all kids have phones. That's not the most desirable, but a lot of the kids did use their phones to communicate back and forth with the teachers.
What have the teachers said about teaching virtually? I mean, it's a completely different environment. What have, I mean, and not just in the Gary area, but around the state.
So I just want to say that at the end of the day, we all want to be face-to-face. We all want to be face-to-face. I was having that conversation today with a teacher. Was talking about waiting on a vaccine. No, we're not waiting on a vaccine. We all want to be face-to-face, but we all want to be safe. And so when we had planned on going in, my superintendent called me and asked me would I stand with her at a press conference, because she just didn't feel comfortable with the news that the Gary commissioner and the Lake County Health Commission was giving in bringing our children in. Our school buildings are like 100 years old. And so, you know, first thing was the HVAC system, you know, and did we have the proper PPE? Most of our schools are not neighborhood schools anymore, so we're on buses. So did we have the proper staff to take the temperature and to do the contact tracing? And we realized we didn't have that. And our Gary Health Commissioner helped us realize that. Now, in the rural areas, you know, with the smaller districts, they have been in since the first day of school, and they've been able to social distance, wear the mask, but they have a smaller population of students. I have my Anderson is one of my districts. I have 27 locals in AFT Indiana. Anderson, they started virtual, and some of the teachers felt some kind of way, so they went to a school board meeting, and they said they wanted to go back in. So they went in, and then the infection rate, you know, just raised. I mean, they wanted to try it. They were doing the hybrid at first, and then they went in full time, and the infection rate just got out of hand where they started having to quarantine teachers, quarantine children, then another group quarantined, and it just was like popcorn. And so they had to go back out. So mostly, all over the state of Indiana, most schools are on virtual right now, but that's not how it started. Then you have some schools, the other thing, where they're teaching face-to-face and teaching virtual. Now, those teachers are really, really, really catching it, because they are saying it's almost impossible to do that. But that's what their administration is asking them to do. We don't think it's fair to the teachers. Matter of fact, we know it's not fair, you know, but you have the parents who have to go to work. Now, in Gary, we have what we call pods, and other cities as well. We have the Boys and Girls Club, we have the YWCA, and we have a couple of churches who have partnered with us for parents that just have to go to work. So we, as a matter of fact, the church that I attend, we have a teacher from the Gary Community School Corporation, and the school that she teaches at, a lot of those kids are in her pod. She only has 20. And then we have another church that's doing the same thing, Boys and Girls Club and the YWCA, where the children whose parents have to go to work, they're in those places. But like I said, like we had here in Lake County, the only one that went in, the one that went in first was Lake Central, and it was against the best wishes of the school board and the administration, but the parents overwhelmingly voted for them to go in. Now they're out. And I just looked at the last data. I think it's like 1,500 teachers have got, you know, COVID, and maybe over 1,000 students have contracted the disease, and we're learning more about it. First, they were saying that, you know, it didn't really affect kids and the children couldn't get it. And now I think over the whole country, a million have been infected with COVID. So, you know, now we're learning more, and it does infect children. Well, I know our first teacher in the state of Indiana died from Carmel. That's another one is in ICU. That might have been last week. I try to stay up on all of it because it's moving and it's, you know, and people need information. So I try to stay informed about all of it, you know, reading the dailies. Teachers are just are scared. Like I have 15 teachers in Gary that are working from home because they never went in the buildings because they have autoimmune deficiencies like lupus and cancer and those kind of things. And we know that they are high risk. So they were able to get the, with the CARES Act, a bill, the First Family CARES Act, I believe that's the bill that was passed. They can stay home as long as they have excuse from their doctor and work from home.
I think, and I may be wrong about this, but I think that the death you're referring to was a staff member. It wasn't a teacher, but still someone who's in the school. So that's alarming. Would you say from your experience that most teachers, because of the pandemic, most teachers and they're concerned with their safety, that most of them want to go virtual and be virtual 100%?
Because of COVID, I always want to put it out there that teachers want to be in. A lot of my teachers, when they started virtual, it was like, oh my God, you know, we hate this. They hate it. They hate virtual. I mean, it's hard. And I go into some of their classrooms and I look at, I'm amazed at what they're doing though, especially when I go into the high school, all the different things. I see the gym teacher and I'm seeing her sweating and the kids are doing the exercises and the music teacher is playing the music and the kids are singing. So they're really being creative and all that kind of thing. But I know that they're afraid to go in. They don't think that we'll be, you know, properly protected. They don't think that, because the thing about with teachers, you know, a lot of times you get lost in the shuffle. I mean, we might start off good, you know, we might open up our schools and say everybody goes in, but then like a month in, it's like, you know, people forget. You know, they forget about the teachers. They forget about, you know, it becomes a tug of war. And you're really fighting for your rights. You know, we're running out of masks. You know, we're running out of hand sanitizer. When you're going to get us some more? You know, then we end up buying it ourselves like we buy everything else. And so I believe that's what it's all about. Oh, the custodian didn't clean my room last night. Or, oh, you know, I have a case. You know, are you going to bring in the company to sanitize the building? You know, stuff like that. And so once you're in there, and then it's hard to, you know, go back out because everybody wants everybody in. You know, that's the you know, the economy and you know, you have to mention what's coming out of the Washington, D.C. You know, it's like, put those kids in school. Put those teachers in school. You know, they're essential workers. Put them in there. You know, which is, that conversation was like, to me, not kind at all. You know, like teachers don't want to be at work. I mean, we took a lot of flack. I mean, a lot of name calling. When in March we were the heroes, but then in August we became anything people wanted to call us because we care about ourselves. And as teachers, a lot of times we don't put ourselves first. We put the kids first. But when it comes to life and death, you have to look at things differently. You know, am I willing to really give my life when I don't have to, when people can do things the right way? And if they don't, you know, I feel like we can make up the virtual losses. I feel like we can. Maybe people don't, but I feel like we can. I feel like we can do the after-school tutoring. I feel like we can do Saturday schools. I feel like we can extend our school year. I feel like we can do all of that to catch our kids up. But I know that we can't get lives back. And so that's the way I look at it. And I believe in following the science. Teachers are not scientists. We do have science teachers, but we have scientists who go to school and study these kind of things. And I believe in listening to them.
And just about 30 seconds left. What changes would you like to see happen for teachers and schools, for that matter, across Indiana?
First of all, I'd like for Congress to pass the second stimulus package so that we can get more PPE money, so we can buy the sanitizer stations, so we can get proper ventilation in our schools, so we can hire more people, so we can check the temperatures and get bus aides on the buses to make sure that the children sit where they're supposed to sit. I want it done properly. And I know some places, they're doing it properly because they have the funds, you know, not just the PPE funds, but they just have, you know, money in their districts. You know, they pass referendums and they have extra money in their coffers where they can do it, or they're small enough to do it. Some schools have the plexiglass in front of the students and the plexiglass in front of the teachers. You know, they have the resources, and that's what we needed. That's what AFT has been saying from the outset. You know, you can't get life back. And so we know education is very important, but I think life is important, more important than education.
Gleneva Dunham is the president of the Indiana American Federation of Teachers. Gleneva, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
And just a quick note before I go today, I announced this last Friday, but if you haven't heard yet, today is my last day at All In. I'm moving on to another opportunity here in Indianapolis. It wasn't an easy decision for me to make. In fact, I'd say it was hands down the hardest professional decision I've ever made. Indiana Public Broadcasting is really doing it right with this show, and we are lucky to have this team still behind it. Nothing is changing here except the voice behind the microphone, and we hope to get a permanent host in soon. In the meantime, you'll be in great hands with WFYI's Taylor Bennett and Jill Sheridan, as well as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay as fill-in hosts. And of course, there will be quite a few repeats to get us through the holidays, so you're not done with me yet. I do want to thank you for listening, though, and welcoming me onto your radio every afternoon. And as always, support the show by supporting the station you're listening to right now. Our producers are the steadfast and wonderful Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. The brilliant Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our overqualified technical director and theme composer. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts. And we won't be airing a show tomorrow for Thanksgiving, but we will be back after that. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelzer. Please stay safe this long holiday weekend. This is All In.